So is Jesus right? If we don't listen to Moses and the prophets, will we also refuse to be persuaded by someone who rises from the dead? Now, most of us wouldn't think of ourselves as being filthy rich, like the people described by either Amos or Jesus. We don't identify with that rich guy too much. Just so few of us have been quite as destitute as Lazarus. And most importantly, there's one big difference between the rich man and Lazarus and all of us. And that is that the rich man and Lazarus are dead. If you're sitting here this morning, I'm assuming you're alive. So this is a story for the living. This is a story for the living like the rich man's brothers. We are the brothers and sisters of the rich man. Abraham did not send Lazarus to us to warn us, but God did send Jesus. And Luke is writing to us about him, about following Jesus, the Christ, the Messiah of God. And Luke was willing to take a chance on us, that we would be persuaded. Persuaded of what, though? That hell is hot and there's no water, kind of like Florida this month? Reinhold Niebuhr, a great American theologian of the mid-20th century, marveled at how people would just leap right over the point of Jesus' parables to speculate on the furniture of heaven and the temperature of hell. The point of this parable is not to teach us about hell, nor is the point of this parable to tell us that it's bad to be rich. Abraham was one wealthy fellow, so was King David, both beloved of God. Jesus is not condemning the ability to make money. Indeed, it's a spiritual gift to have the savvy to be able to do that. What this is about is our attitude towards that money, the place it has in our hearts. The love of money is the sin. The love of money is a sin because it's grounded in selfishness, in getting what we want without any concern for others. How do we begin to idolize money? Why do we do that? I've given this some thought. I might be wrong, of course, but this is my hunch. My hunch is that we begin to turn money into an idol, into a replacement for God, when we become fearful and anxious that we won't have enough. Both rich people and those without any money at all can be so afraid of not having enough that they become hoarders. Hoarding money, hoarding things against the anxiety of not having what we need turns us inward, and it focuses us on inanimate objects instead of people, on shiny breakable toys instead of God. Hoarding money and hoarding things builds a secure fortress made of dead stuff that walls us off and keeps us from taking hold of what is truly life. How can we be liberated from this fortress? How can we take hold of what is truly life? The letter to Timothy tells us how to tear down those walls. He says, do good. Be rich in the good things we do. Be generous. Share with others. Maya Angelou summed it up well. Giving liberates the soul of the giver. Giving liberates the soul of the giver. And there's some real evidence that this is true. I've come across many stories about really, really, really wealthy people. I mean really, really wealthy people who quite deliberately decided to stop hoarding their money. They looked past their walls. They saw the millions of Lazaruses at their gates and decided to do good, to be generous, to share with others, and to be free. Looking outside those gates, well, speaking of gates, how about Bill and Melinda Gates of Microsoft? They're working on giving away at least one half of their billions, and they're giving it away to address illness and poverty. And by the way, both of them are practicing Roman Catholics. That well-known liberal magazine, Fortune, did a piece. These are the number one of the 50 greatest leaders in the world, not just the United States, in the world. These were the number one. And here's how they talk about them. They say that they called Bill Gates the foremost itinerant advocate for the poor. He goes all over the world at his own expense to advocate for the poor, getting governments to change their policies, but also has given billions of dollars to eradicate polio and to provide economic opportunities, especially for the desperately poor women in developing countries who already have three strikes against them when they're born. So that's Bill Gates. Another one I came across was J.K. Rowling, author of the Harry Potter books. She dropped off the Forbes 500 list of the wealthiest people back in 2012. The major reasons were given were the high British taxes and her generosity to charities. A former welfare mom, Rowling said she's privileged to have plenty and to be able to pay taxes that help those who are in the same situation she used to be, because she knows what it's like to be 2 pence short of a tin of baked beans and your child is hungry. But she doesn't rely on the British government for her care of those who suffer. This good Anglican woman has reportedly already given away 16% of her fortune to charity. Just before the first Harry Potter book came out, Rowling's mother died after suffering from multiple sclerosis for 10 years. She has given over $25 million towards research and treatment of that devastating disease. Very recently, I became aware of another victim of multiple sclerosis. Her name is Cammy Walker, the young woman diagnosed with multiple sclerosis a month after her wedding. She had excellent medical care that's available in California, but Cammy was very, very sick, very, very miserable, and very, very angry. And this was totally understandable. She's 35, and she's looking at a life of pain, infertility, and not even being able to walk. When Cammy was in the depths of her anger, she received a very unusual diagnosis and prescription from a South African medicine woman who was teaching American doctors in California, no surprise there, the power of traditional African healing techniques, which looks not only at the physical aspects of disease, but also its spiritual side. The medicine woman, her name is Mbali, again from South Africa, told Cammy that all the time and energy that Cammy was spending focusing on herself, her pain, was not only going to make her disease worse, it was sending her spirit into a black hole. So she gave, Mbali gave Cammy a prescription. And the prescription was for Cammy to stop thinking about herself and to give. Specifically, to give away 29 gifts for 29 days. One gift a day. Well, Cammy fussed and bothered and bothered and fussed. She refused to do it, but things only got worse. And one day she was so spiritually and physically miserable that she decided, why not give it a shot? And she did it for 29 straight days, which was Mbali's prescription. It made such a difference to her that she did it for another and another and another. And a year later, she was cured of MS. That's a lie. She was not. That's not what happened. She still has a disease, and pain is a constant in her life. However, she says, it doesn't control her anymore. She is free. She is truly alive. She has relationships, beautiful relationships, with her husband and with many, many other people. And she has, she says, 10,000 reasons to keep on living. Cammy has written a book about this prescription. It's called, I'm sure you won't be surprised, 29 Gifts, How a Month of Giving Can Change Your Life. And I'd like to give you a sample of that prescription. You know how when you go to the doctor and they give you a new prescription and then they say, you know, here's a sample to get you started? So I've got a sample to get us started. I'm giving out a slip of paper, and I need some vestry members up here, please, because I need you to pass out the handout. Let's do this as fast as we can. Now, I don't want you to look at this until everyone has their handout. And don't forget the choir. They get really cranky when we forget them. Don't read. I told you not to read. You're reading. Don't be reading. Don't be reading. So this is a slip of paper with a small bow on it. Why'd you get a bow? Because it's a gift. Good. All right. Glad you're paying attention. So for your trial prescription, I'm inviting you to take this slip and bow and give it a shot for 29 days. And I want you to take the bow off the paper and put it somewhere where you'll see it every day to remind you. You might put it on your coffee pot, on your rearview mirror, your purse, your desk, your backpack. So let's take a look at what are some of the, well, and I want you to be intentional about the gift. You know how I do my to-do list too much of the time? I do a bunch of stuff, then I put it on my to-do list so I can check it off. I don't want you to be looking backwards and saying, yeah, I did that. I want you to be looking forward to your day and just becoming aware of how it is that you can be so present to the Lazaruses that show up your gate that you think to give them the gift. And remember, it doesn't need to be fancy. It doesn't even need to be a thing. It just needs to be meaningful. So here are some examples on this paper. One idea is, and this was Cammie's first gift, was to give a tissue to someone who was crying. Okay, it again, just meaningful to the recipient. An ear to someone who's lonely. A flower to a widow on her wedding anniversary. An extra large tip to an overworked restaurant server. A home to a rescue animal. Food to a hungry person. An hour or two of respite to a caregiver. Why don't you let someone actually turn on to 19 when they're trying to get out of a shopping center? That would make their day. Pick up trash in a public area. When you go for a walk, take a bag and pick up trash. You're making a difference for people you'll never know, but what a grace. Help something you love to someone who needs it more than you do. One of the stories I heard was of a woman who had a teapot that her mother, that had been her mother's, and when she looked at it, she thought of her mother. And a woman moved in near her who was from England and had come over with just suitcases, not with any boxes. And she knew that an English woman without a teapot is pathetic. So she took her mother's teapot and gave it to her neighbor to say, I know you need a teapot, and this is my gift to you. She said it was really hard to give up, but that woman is using my mother's teapot. And that, well, don't you think that liberated the soul of the giver? There is one gift I think is important, and it's the one on the bottom. And that's that stretch gift to someone whose life is picking up crumbs. Stretch gift of food to someone who's hungry. Now, it can be financial or it can be in kind. It can be giving out like that young man did on the street last week, jumping out of his car and giving something to a hungry guy. There may be a meal you prepare for someone who doesn't often get a square meal. It can be someone you know or someone you meet. It can be on Bagzilla Sunday when we give food to Dunedin Cares. It can be a financial donation. But the stretch part is that it's something that's not just easy for you, not just going through your cupboard and getting all the tins of beans that are about to expire, but something that costs you some time and some effort that you do intentionally to serve those who are nestled in the bosom of Abraham, only they're still alive. The point of this, you know what stretch is for you. No one's going to judge that or decide that for you. But the point is to get beyond the anxiety of the fear of scarcity, to be persuaded by someone who has been risen from the dead to tell us, his brothers and sisters, the way of true life is the way of liberation from fear and death is to give as freely as we can. God gives all of creation to humanity so abundantly. We did nothing to deserve it. It's all gift. And what a gift it is. It's given so we can share these gifts with each other. Consider, nothing is ours forever, is it? Can we take it with us? All that we have been given is a gift. So let's put a bow on it.